unfasten your chin strap and get ready for the snap. The Eric Ainge Show with Brian Rice is ready to go. Sports Animals VFL QB is ready to give you the insight and analysis that no one else in Tennessee radio can. Get in Eric's headset by calling 656-9900. 656-9900. The Eric Ainge Show with Brian Rice is headed your way right now.
Hour 2 of the Eric Ainge Show coming at you live from the Budweiser Studios of Cumulus Broadcasting. We're brought to you by Mortgage Investors Group. MIGonline.com. Take advantage of the home court advantage through Mortgage Investors Group. You can find out more about how it's going to keep some money in your pocket, less out-of-pocket expenses to buy a home.
All right, 656-9900. You want to get in and chat with us. Eric Hain, pinch hitting for Brian Rice alongside Ainge and Joel Silverberg. Let's talk a little Joe Burrow. All right, the Heisman Trophy winning quarterback earlier this week or over the weekend, whenever it was. Earlier this week, was accepting the 2019 Davey O'Brien Award in Fort Worth, Texas, when he came out and had some sound bites for the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. This is a quote you've heard all week long, last couple of days. Burrow says, in reference to the Bengals and the NFL draft, "I do have leverage. They have their process. I have my process. We haven't even gotten to the NFL scouting combine yet. There's a lot of things that happen leading up to the draft and a lot of information gathered." He goes on to say, "Right now, I'm focused on being the best football player I can be. I'm in this unique spot, and Eric, you can speak on this. You can go watch my film. I don't have to prove myself at Pro Day or at the Combine. So I'm in a unique spot to where I can focus on getting ready for this year." That was Joe Burrow's comments, essentially the headline grabber. "I have the leverage," in reference to Cincinnati, the Bengals, and the draft.
Yeah, and here's the thing. Yeah, there's only been a couple quarterbacks ever that have done this. But if you're Joe Burrow, like, I do not believe Joe Burrow is saying, "I'm not going to play for the Bengals," because the other options right there up front, they're no better. If you pull up the draft order, I'm pretty sure it's the Redskins that have the second pick.
Well, you also have the Lions, who are rumored at 3.
And Lions at 3, you know, Dolphins at 5. I mean,
I'm pulling it up right now.
Ultimately, I'm just saying, like, if you're Joe Burrow, would you rather go to?
I'm not like Tyler and have it memorized.
Miami.
You got the Bengals at 1, the Redskins at 2, the Lions at 3, who are rumored to, like, and we'll talk about this later, Herbert over Tua,
which is a joke.
Which Stafford's going to be their quarterback next year, so it's a moot point. The Giants at 4, Dolphins at 5, Chargers need a quarterback at 6 as well. Panthers might need a quarterback at 7, and then, you know, Cardinals, Jaguars, Browns.
And those guys, Joe Burrow and Tua Tagovailoa are going to be gone by the 5th pick. Those guys are getting picked early, in my opinion.
Yeah, I don't really think the 2 is going to slide past 5 for sure. Definitely not Burrow.
If I were a betting man, which I'm not, but if I were, I would bet that Joe Burrow ends up getting picked first by the Bengals, and he goes there. He's from Ohio. It's not like that's a stretch. Here's the thing, though. I don't like when the conversation turns to Joe Burrow, and it's like, well, he's talking about leverage. He's going to pull an Eli. No, he's cocky. He's this. He's that. Well, no, he's probably the most confident young man.
I was going to say, and that can often come across as cocky. And, you know, that's just, I mean,
But that's why I wanted you to pull the whole quote up, because I didn't want it to come across sounding like, you know, like Joe Burrow is. Here's the thing. He's 100% dead on. He doesn't need to go to the Senior Bowl or to the combine to throw routes versus air to guys he's never thrown to before.
The only thing he's going
to
do is hurt himself potentially if he does that.
Yeah, and I think he's such a competitive
kid. If he has a rough day, then I mean it's like, oh well, you know, but he's still going to be.
And I think he's good enough that there's no way he would.
Yeah,
but I also think that to his point, it's not going to help him. No, they're not going to. They've already decided what they're going to do, regardless.
And 2019 was your. And he was spectacular.
He is, and Kaner, you played college football. For the people that don't know, Kaner. Most everybody knows that I played college football that's listening. Kaner played at Carson Newman. You're a linebacker. Mm-hmm. How much easier is it to defend the pass play in the red zone on defense versus in just at the middle of the field when you have the entire field to cover?
Well, it's a lot easier.
Everything shrinks down. Everything.
And where did Joe Burrow excel this year? It was in the red zone.
And that's why I bring that up, because there's just so many things without going through everything that he is and that he stands for and that with all the reasons you would want to draft him first, this guy had the best red zone passing season of any quarterback I've ever seen in football.
We looked it up heading into the playoffs.
Not college, not high school, not pro, I mean, period. The best red zone passing season that has ever happened in football, period.
We looked it up going into the national championship where he threw for over 70% in the red zone. In the red zone.
And 34 red zone touchdowns, 0 red zone interceptions.
And that right there, no turnovers in the red zone, at least
through
the air.
Three more touchdowns just in the red zone this year than I threw my entire senior season.
Yeah.
Just in the red zone.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's incredible. Overall, he threw 60 touchdowns.
Tennessee fans know the struggles of the Big Orange offense in the red zone this past football season. Look at the bowl game. That was just a little snippet of what Tennessee struggled with in the red zone this year. And having, you know, a guy like Burrow that never threw an interception in the red zone is truly remarkable. And so, yeah, and I would agree with you. He also goes on to say, you know, in this interview with Fort Worth Star-Telegram that, you know, I'm from Ohio. I think it would be pretty neat. It's interesting. Like, it'd be cool. But again, there's a lot of time between now and then, and I have the leverage. And so you don't think that he means anything by that as well. Joe Burrow's mother doesn't believe he means anything by that either. She comes out and says to, again, that same publication, "We have no idea where that comes from. It's a story out there that someone has created that doesn't have any substance from our perspective, at least." If you remember maybe a month or two ago, Joe Burrow's dad came out and said, "Oh yeah, he would certainly play for the Bengals."
Okay,
this is a family from Ohio. I mean,
yeah, no, you know, I mean, I just,
and he's coached too, and so like you know he gets it.
Yeah, I'm excited for the NFL draft. I think the other part of the conversation is, and there's I don't know what it was. I texted it to you late last night. I just saw the caption that the Lions are thinking about quarterback. Maybe they have the third pick in the draft. And we all know Matt Stafford's going to be the quarterback there next year. But if you could get quarterback play that would be comparable to his through the draft and take that contract and split it up to get your three other pieces on your football team, that's how you go make a run. That's how you make a run in the NFL. It's with everything else and a rookie quarterback contract and the best defense in the league or whatever. Or you have to pay the quarterback all the money in the world because he's just a world beater. And then you lose some of those other things, but they make up for the deficiencies. I think that Tua Tagovailoa, if he can stay healthy, is a franchise quarterback. He is an NFL starting quarterback. He's got the composure. He's not all that big, but he's a better athlete than he gets credit for. He spins it so perfect, and he's so accurate. That in the NFL, I mean, that's what you have to be. He's got a good quick release. He's smart. He's got all the tools. He's got everything. Justin Herbert is a bust. He's at best, in my opinion, a mid-second round pick. I personally would not draft him on my football team. He reminds me a lot of Brock Osweiler.
Well, he's big.
He's big. He's athletic. He can sling it. He looks good in his pads. Mm-hmm. He makes some good plays, and he obviously isn't a bad player.
This is what NFL scouts are just drooling over. 6'6", 240 pounds.
And he's very athletic.
From Eugene, Oregon. I don't know anybody athletic. Up there from Oregon.
Justin Herbert, though, is not a smart enough. I know, I didn't bite. He's a smart enough guy that he's been able to be good in college against Pac-12 defenses.
Yeah.
I just don't think he's got it. I watched him play in the opener this year as a senior against Auburn, maybe it was the second week of the season. Anyway, early in the year, they played Auburn, and that defense just ate him up. And they were really good. I mean, they held even Joe Burrow to in the 20s. You know, that Auburn defense was special this year, but Herbert just, he didn't know what to do. He didn't know where the pressures were coming from. He looked confused. And that happened a lot all year long where I just would watch him and I'd go, he obviously doesn't understand what they're trying to do right here because the other team is blitzing and he's trying to run away from the blitz. You throw into the blitz, into the teeth of the blitz is what you normally do. If you're going to throw to the other side, then you got to do it. There's someone dropping out. There's a zone dropping D in. There's a linebacker cutting on, trying to get to the flat. There's something. You have to have a sense of urgency and know when teams are pressuring you that you need to have the answer right now. And he never did. He just, I watching him play was very unimpressed with his mental understanding of quarterback play. I don't think he's got it from the neck up, and I wouldn't draft him.
You know, it's interesting. A lot of people are criticizing Herbert for not going out for the draft last year when it was a smaller, weaker class. And statistically, might have been his worst year as a starting quarterback for Oregon. 59% completion percentage. Now, it was never that bad. I mean, as a freshman, he threw 63, sophomore 67, a senior 66, a junior 59.
Yeah,
he turned it over.
That's not Jake Locker bad. But
no.
It's not good.
He turned it over 8 times. I mean, he doesn't throw that many interceptions in a season, but that was the most he ever threw in his career, 8 times. But
he could be like what Ryan Tannehill is, mm-hmm. maybe in the league, maybe. But Ryan Tannehill should not have been a first-round draft pick. He's not a franchise quarterback. He shouldn't be getting paid $25, $30 million to be a quarterback. That's ridiculous. There's a reason he only made 6 last year. You know what I'm saying? Like, Herbert doesn't have it. No dice. If you're not a franchise guy, I don't understand why teams take quarterbacks in the first round. If you don't think that they could be just the man, then you spend everything to get them. Everything you have to get them if you think they're that good. Because you got to have one. But if you think he's pretty good, you know, he's pretty good. That's not the depth pick. You don't spend a first round draft pick on a depth chart quarterback, in my opinion.
2 is accurate. 2 is very decisive. Again, that injury is gonna scare some people off. But I mean, again, 2 is still gonna be a top 10 draft pick, and we'll see how he competes at his pro day. Again, he's gonna be severely limited if he does anything at all because of his injury. But still, a lot more between these two will come out in the next couple of months. Denver and Detroit and Miami there at 3 and 5. All right, we're going to talk more NFL when we return, more college football, football around, 656-9900, at _Caner, at @EricAinge3 on Twitter, as we return hour number 2 of the Eric Ainge Show on The Sports Animal.
Hey, welcome back into the Eric Ainge Show on The Sports Animal. We're brought to you by Mortgage Investors Group. Caner filling in today for Brian Rice, who's gone with softball for the next couple days.
All right, so Ainge just said off air, "Hey, man, I've got the perfect topic for you." And I said, "All right, you know, what is it? Let's talk about it." And he said, "I'm going to wait and bring it up on air." So
it's better radio.
Literally have no clue what's about to happen. So we're all in this together. Buckle up.
656-9900 if you want to join us here. So I'm watching Tennessee play Vanderbilt in basketball on Tuesday night. And I find myself like real agitated and frustrated watching them play. And it was real. I mean, it was just, I was checking my emotions, and I was sitting there and I was like, man, I genuinely care about who wins this game. Cause I've always referred to myself as kind of a front runner basketball fan. I just own it. You know, like if Tennessee men's basketball is good and they're playing good and they're winning, then I'm all in. If they're not and they're losing, then I don't ever cheer against them.
No,
but it doesn't pull on me emotionally. I think that I need to now, especially after this whole season, the amount of time I've spent watching, going, everything else, I think that I need to add Tennessee men's basketball to my list of emotional sports teams that affect me emotionally.
Okay, so that list is at the top, Tennessee football. And then the list for you, would it be the Caps?
So it would go, I think, and in this order, actually, it would go Tennessee football. It would go SEC football as a whole.
Yeah.
Because I hate watch and other, mm-hmm. every team in the league. And then I would say it's the Tennessee men's basketball team. And then I would say the Caps. The Caps definitely do. Watching my wife celebrate when they won the Stanley Cup a couple years ago, and just everything that is NHL hockey and Caps hockey, it affects me emotionally. Like if we start a game, they've been playing terrible lately. So if you get on there, we'll be excited. But hey, babe, Caps are on at 7:30 tonight. We'll put it on there, and then in the first 5 minutes of the game, it's 2-0 the other team, and you're like, ugh.
Yeah.
You legitimately look forward to watching the games. And then you do, and then if it's not a good game, that's not fun. So, but yeah, I think that for the longest time, like I don't have an NFL team that affects me emotionally anymore.
It's weird too.
Would have the 49ers would have when I was a kid. It did when I was a kid.
Yeah.
The Jets don't. I mean, there's no one there from when I was there.
I was going to say, I mean, you were a part of an organization for a couple of years, and so you have a different, unique perspective. And so it's a business, and so I would understand that the Jets were your quote-unquote favorite team now on retirement, but they're not, and so I understand it's a business.
Like, if the coach or the and or GM and or coordinator of, on either side of the football and
you root for the Seahawks now because of the offensive coordinator.
I root for the Seahawks and I root for the Bills because of who their OCs are, and they're good buddies of mine, both of them, Brian Schottenheimer and Brian Daboll. But when they win or lose, it doesn't affect me emotionally.
Yeah,
you know, I'm rooting for them. I want to see them have success, and if they lose because they specifically did something catastrophic or stupid, then that would affect me emotionally because I wouldn't want them to go through that. But that's not going to happen from those guys.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So like it just doesn't. I mean, the list of like there's no Major League Baseball team that affects me emotionally. Like I know you have some teams that affect you emotionally.
Yeah, I mean, the Atlanta Braves do. And again, you know, hear me out. If I was covering the Braves, then it wouldn't be that way. But I don't cover the Braves. We don't cover the Braves. So yeah, that team affects me emotionally for sure. And then probably the Titans. You know, I'm a football guy. Don't get me wrong. But, man, I've been not to say I haven't rooted for the Titans my whole life. But I mean, I went to Braves games and I was like a toddler. I've been to so many Braves games. I mean, they're on every single night. You create that emotional connection there. And so, sure. And
again, when I was a kid, the Braves did affect me emotionally. I mean, I wore number 10 my entire life.
You got to see every game out in Oregon because of TBS, which is – you know, the story for the Atlanta Braves really, you know, nationwide, how there's so many Braves fans all over the country.
Yeah, that's especially people your age to my age and even older. You know, that's what you grew up watching. It was either the White Sox on WGN, sometimes the Cubbies on WGN, always the Braves on TBS.
Yep.
Those were your teams. That's what you watched. I was a Mariners fan a little bit, you know, just because they were only a couple hours away. And my dad was a big Giants fan.
I mean, back in the 90s, they were legit, too.
Oh, yeah. King Griffey. Legit.
And then they built the new stadium, which I'm blanking on the name. I went to it this summer.
Randy Johnson.
Oh, yeah. That was some good stuff.
Jay Buhner, Edgar Martinez. They were stacked back in the day.
I mean, I was a child. I don't remember.
But. I used to love that stuff. I mean, but like, you know, the conversation comes from I'm watching Tennessee men's basketball play, and I'm sitting there going, Even last year, during the number one undefeated at home, all the great stuff that was last Tennessee men's basketball season, and peanut butter and jelly, all that stuff, it didn't affect me emotionally. Now I got to know Admiral Grant pretty well through the end of their careers and through the process of them getting drafted and going to the NBA and all that, and that may have added to it. But I think I just like and respect Rick Barnes.
I was
going to
say,
much.
Here's the thing too, you know, in this market. If you are a Tennessee fan, unless you are just a basketball person, I mean, Tennessee football is going to come first and foremost, always will, always, you know, for the end of time. That's just how it is. And Tennessee basketball, you're going to get invested in everything, but there are so many chances for that team to win, lose, draw, you know, whatever it may be. So it's always going to be around and everything, and there's more to talk about throughout the season for Tennessee basketball, but it's nothing like football where it's do or die one time a week, and you live and pray on every pass play from Garantano this year. But seeing a team like Tennessee basketball last year, seeing, you know, Rick Barnes, what he did with those players you just brought up, Grant Williams, Admiral Schofield, seeing the postgame sound bites and you getting to know these players, the social media team is incredible at Tennessee across the board, but it was all over the place with basketball last year. So, like you said, you get to know them, and so it does affect you if you were kind of on the fence about Tennessee basketball, and I think a lot of the fan base was. And so now you're seeing this year a lot of outrage because the season isn't anywhere close to where it was last year. No one expected it to be like that, but you know, you're taking your lumps and everything. But I will say this, if you jumped on that Tennessee, that fandom, I don't want to say bandwagon because I mean, you live in Tennessee, you're a Tennessee fan, but you jumped on that train to where you're going to support the team. You're hitting some lumps right now, but man, next year the guys coming to next year are going to be legit. And again, you know, keep in mind, look at the progress that John Fulkerson and Eve Pons have made in their time at Tennessee. I mean, John Fulkerson, will he be an all-SEC player? Probably not, but he's a caliber type player. I mean, he certainly is a guy that's at least in the conversation. E. Pons is one of the best defenders in the entire country, the best shot blockers in the conference, I mean.
No, 100%. I mean, there's so many different storylines within Tennessee basketball. And we're going to keep doing that when we get back. 656-9900. If you want to join us here and talk some Tennessee men's hoop, what's the rest of the season going to look like? They're currently 7-6 in the Southeastern Conference, 15-11 overall. What are the next 5 games look like heading into the SEC men's basketball tournament for our Tennessee men's basketball team? When we get back here on the Eric Ainge Show on the Sports Animal. Appreciate everybody tuning in to us today on the Eric Ainge Show. Eric Kane, Kaner, filling in for Brian Rice today. You're listening to the EA Show.
I spell my name the correct way.
E-R-I-C?
E-R-I-C.
What does E-R-I-C mean?
Means the correct way to spell Eric. I think it's funny when people text you or tweet you or something or email you and they spell your name with a C.
It makes me happy. UT still, like, to this day, like, I'll go over there for practice or to go see a coach or our athletic director or something, and I'll get a little pass, and it'll say Eric with a C.
That's funny. That makes
every time Coach Fulmer texts me, it says, "Hey Eric with a with
but
a."
But it's
with
like
a C.
It's like, okay, I didn't correct him back in 2004. I'm not gonna correct him now.
Never.
It's like, yeah, it's
like it does not bother me at, like, in the least bit.
Yeah, as it shouldn't.
Name meaning for Eric with a K with a C.
There's name meaning websites out there. Like, you can look up
Eric,
the name of
the Red in English, navigator and explorer.
With a C, is a C?
With a K, okay. It means ever ruler.
I think you just made that up.
No, I didn't look.
No.
Yeah, dude, look. Meaning in history.
So I'm a navigator
ever,
and explorer.
Always ruler, the mighty.
Oh, you don't need any more of that. Pump that ego. So you're a ruler and I'm an explorer.
Eric with a C is a Scandinavian name meaning everlasting ruler with a C. Yeah, that's what it means.
Oh, that's me.
Yeah, it doesn't matter how you spell it.
Let's pop my ego now.
Doesn't matter how you spell it.
All right, dude. 5 games left, regular season. Tennessee basketball. You got 2 against Auburn starting on Saturday at Auburn. You're good at Arkansas. Tennessee already handled business against Arkansas. You square off against Florida. You're going to go to Rupp Arena, Kentucky, and then host Auburn. You posed the question when we headed to the reset, you know, what's left on the table for this Tennessee basketball team the rest of the way? You're sitting at, I don't have my notes in front of me, but a 7-6 record in the SEC. I believe you're what now? 15-11, I believe, is the overall record. You know, what's left on the table? I mean, I think back burner in terms of NCAA tournament hopes. But, you know, you've got the SEC tournament in front of you. You've got the potentially an NIT. You know, we want to know what's your thought process on the Tennessee basketball team right now.
So they're 7-6 overall. They have 5 games left. I mean, if they won all 5 of the games, which I'm not saying I think they're going to, but if they did, then that's a 12-6 conference record in the SEC with a ton of tier one wins, and they'd be going to the tournament, man.
Yeah, that's not. Yeah,
they'd be a 20-11 team. That's not going to happen.
I would be shocked.
That's not going to happen. But yeah, we've kind of like watching the Tennessee bowl game. I just kept saying, like, they still have time. They still have time. And then before that last drive in the fourth quarter, when the 5-minute mark, the first one of the spark, I ran and I told my wife, and I was like, they no longer have time. it has to happen right now.
Time is up.
Right now, or it's not happening. Like, Tennessee men's basketball is still in a position where they could win out and be a tournament team. If they lose this weekend at Auburn, then that's probably done.
Yeah, it's going to be really tough. Really, really tough. I mean, yes.
And that shouldn't be the goal. I have by no stretch expect them to be a tournament team at this point in time. People sometimes, you know, they listen and they think that, it doesn't really bother me what they think, but they think that because before the season we were saying this could be a tournament team, and now that we're not, that we're just taking up for Rick Barnes or making excuses for the program, and like that, things change in sports. Opinions change as things change. When we had Lamonte Turner and we didn't know he was hurting, I'm sitting there going, we got Lamonte Turner and Jordan Bowden back, and look at, you know, and how good could Pons and Folky be?
Yeah. Rick Barnes has said numerous times, I mean, he's had to reset this roster. Monday in his press conference. I mean, he wasn't making excuses for his team. Don't hear me wrong.
It's not an excuse.
It is what it is. But he said,
it's a reason.
He said, listen, you know, I'm going to add this. Tennessee lost 71% of the scoring coming into the season. And then Rick Barnes says, hey, if you would have told me that we'd have two guys playing right now that weren't on our opening night roster, that being Santiago Vescovi or Uros Plavsic, you would have told me that we would lose Lamonte, that Jordan Bowden would statistically have his worst shooting year of his career. He's played elite defense, but shooting-wise, his worst shooting year of his career. And, you know, all this stuff going on, yeah, I told you we're crazy. I'm surprised that we are where we are right now. Things happen. And, yes, you know, in terms of the recruitment, in terms of how he's handled Uros at point in times this year, you can all question that, and that's fine. As a fan that spends money and time and all that stuff, you can question that. That's what we do as well. But, you know, I mean, yes, this team at full strength, it could have been a tournament team, but this team has never been at full strength this year. And you're playing a lot of freshmen. And so it certainly is a rebuilding type situation.
No, and much like our football team, this upcoming season, is scoring the only part of basketball that matters? No. Mm-hmm. Are receiving yards the only thing that matter in football? No. But if you can't put points on the board, it's hard to win games.
Tennessee plays a good defense, a good brand of defense.
Very good.
Tennessee's one of the worst teams in the entire nation in terms of points per game.
So
you got to have points to score and to win. You're exactly right.
It's hard when you don't have the depth to play the kind of defense that Rick Barnes demands from his team, and then turn around and be just as efficient on the offensive end. The reason Jordan Bowden is having the worst statistical year shooting of his career is because he plays 35 to 40 minutes every game, and he expels all the energy he's got defending on the perimeter. He is such a good defender and works so hard at it that, yeah, of course, he's not as good on offense. That's just straight up how it works. It's like when you play both ways. Did you play both ways in high school?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so, and then you get to college, and then you're only playing.
I was one of like three players that did it, and I had to be asked off like kickoff. I was like, I need a break.
Yeah, but my point is, at your best, when you're playing both ways in high school football, you're not nearly as, like, one of the reasons we see kids go to college and look better than they did in high school is because they're only playing on one side of the ball.
Dude, sidebar.
They get to actually take a break. Bowden in hoops is defense, then he's transition, offense, defense. I mean, he never gets a break, never gets to sit down.
Yeah, sidebar, my junior year in high school, we tried to go 2-platoon, 11-on-11, so I start on defense because that's where they needed me the most. But then, you know, midway through the year, they needed me to play offense, so I went in, snapped the ball, we ran a veer. And my first game back, by the way, we had over 500 yards total offense because we run that veer and, you know, get into the second level. Anyway, if you can play center if you're small in a veer.
That what first high game back, did you go to?
Jeff County.
Okay.
That first game back, I was so tired because I was playing both ways that I called the defense on the field. That's kind of how we did things. I had to tell my other linebacker, you know, what play to run. And he had to call it because I was physically so tired.
You were so tired.
That's what it is. And then you get used to it the more the season goes on.
Well, that's what I'm saying too. Like when you look at these guys that are like Bowden on defense, he has to do so much from a defensive side of the football.
Santiago Vescovi
really, really hard. Vescovi's playing really good defense too.
And he said, Rick Barnes has said, you know, we didn't plan on Vescovi playing at all. You know, when he came in, we still had Turner. You know, we shouldn't happen to be playing him, but right now we couldn't imagine the season without him right now because of what he's doing. Yeah. And yes, he turns the ball over so much, and he's going to have to grow out of that. He's going to have to take some adjustments.
He's gotten better at it, though. I mean, he's not nearly as bad as he was to start the year. I mean, he also is playing out of position. I mean, that's like Santiago Vescovi is not a point guard.
Yeah, you said that.
He's a shooting guard for sure. And I think it's been impressive watching. I mean, imagine that you show up, you're there for like a week or two.
He was there for a week.
There for a week. And that now you're playing and it's right to start SEC play. And your first game's against LSU, ranked LSU.
Scores 18 points.
And he's just money from behind the arc. Again, he turned the ball over a ton and played terrible defense. Mm-hmm. So like as he's gotten in better shape, he doesn't turn it over as much. He plays really good defense. And then the shooting has taken a little bit of it's not quite as good as it was, but like he's learning what to do.
He played 38 minutes the other night.
They all do.
And so it's funny too. He had one of the better quotes after the game. He said, "This is the first time I've ever seen Coach Barnes, you know, mad after a win. Like we won, but he's so mad." And he's like, "I understand. You know, we're not playing the game the way he wants us to. We're turning things over, and I get it. I am just so tired. I've had so many turnovers. I'm just so tired right now." And so he's got to work out of that as well. So again, Tennessee basketball, 5 games left. Is this the season you as a fan base wanted? Absolutely not. Has there been some questionable things throughout the year? Yes, there always is.
Most likely score record in the last 5 games, at Auburn, at Arkansas, versus Florida, at Kentucky, and then Auburn at home. Is it 1-4, 2-3, 3-2, or 4-1?
I don't bet, but if I were, I'd put 2-3. But it's tough. You'd like to take one from Auburn.
I think I'm going to pick 3-2. I mean, if they go 3-2 in those last 5 games, that's really impressive. I mean, and that ends up putting them at 10-8 in the SEC. Mm-hmm. That's not.
And then all things considered, and again,
for everything considered, yeah, no, exactly.
But again, so it's going to be a tough stretch. Again, it's going to be at Auburn, at Arkansas, Florida, at Kentucky, and Auburn to finish out the regular season. More Tennessee hoops talk, more Tennessee football talk when we return, and we'll have our upset of the week. We will give in here for the weekend when we come back for a final segment of hour number two of the Eric Ain Show. With EA, I am Eric Ain. This is the EA Show on the Sports Animal.
Welcome back into the Eric Ain Show on the Sports Animal. 656-9900. If you want to join us, it's time for our upset of the week. It's brought to you by Gray Hodges and Craft Made Cabinetry. I am getting my Craft Made Cabinetry, the Dove White with the fancy trim is what I call it. That is definitely not what it's actually called, but it's a dual vanity. I'm having that come here, on Monday.
Well,
but before we talk Gray Hodges, before we talk Craft Made, before we talk upsets coming up, real quick. 656 wins, caller number 5. You could call and you could be a winner of 2 Foo tickets Fighters. To the Foo Fighters. Right now, 656-WINS. Give it a call, caller number 5. 2 tickets to the Foo Fighters coming up in April, on April 20th here at Thompson Bowling Arena. Again, no, I don't need to say it again. It's already lit up a million times. So there you go. All right, Kaner, as Joel's getting the Foo Fighter ticket winner. Appreciate KnoxvilleTickets.com. By the way, tickets go on sale tomorrow. KnoxvilleTickets.com/Foo Fighters.
Another awesome, awesome concert in the concert lineup here in Knoxville last year. It's been some good stuff. Okay, so upset of the weekend. I'm going to head on over to the hardwood, talk a little college basketball. There are a number of games that are going to be super compelling. I'm just going to briefly throw out a few right here, and we can talk about them later. Coming off just a beatdown last night, 22 points. On the road for Duke. Duke's going to host Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech actually led Duke at home earlier this year for quite some time. It's going to be on the road. It's going to be, quite a task playing in Cameron, but watch for Duke and VT on Saturday as well. This is going to be a fantastic game. It's 1-3, Baylor, Kansas. Baylor's going to be the home team. Baylor's the top-ranked team in the country. Baylor's on this long win streak. I get all that. If Kansas goes in there and knocks them off, I mean, sure, it's technically going to be an upset, but it's going to be a really good basketball game. So, I mean, that's the premier matchup on Saturday at noon. So you can wake up, you can do some morning stuff, and then catch that one right to kick off your Saturday. Another one that I was looking at here, and I think Joel was talking about it last night on Twitter, NC State took it to Duke last night, all right? Needed a resume win in the worst way. Got it last night against the 6th-ranked Blue Devils, who arguably playing the best basketball in the country right now up until last night. Another opportunity against Florida State, hosting Florida State, number 8 Florida State at home. Watch out, NC State's hot right now. Watch for the Wolfpack to take down the Seminoles on Saturday.
I called it when the Florida State-Tennessee game happened in, the first week or two of college basketball. Watching them play, I said, that's a 2 or a 3 seed.
A lot of people said,
after watching that they're going to be pretty good, but I don't think anyone else was saying that they were going to be a 2 seed.
Yeah,
I really do think Florida State, I like putting them on my upset alert because of who they're playing. Mm-hmm. But I think Florida State is one of the better basketball teams in the country, and they're built for the tournament. They're long, they're athletic, they play both ends of the floor, they rebound, they do all this stuff that even if you're not having a good night scoring the basketball or shooting, they shoot free throws well. Like, they are a very good basketball team, Florida State is. I'm going to keep it in college basketball for one. I'm going to put Auburn on upset alert.
Okay.
Tennessee goes to Auburn, to the Jungle. This weekend, playing against Bruce Pearl at Auburn. They have a ranked team. They're really good. They just lost last night 65-55 to Georgia.
Tennessee doesn't back away from a challenge. Went on the road to Lawrence, took on Kansas, you know,
fought tooth and nail. They just, I mean, we don't have an answer for a legit NBA first round 7 foot prospect.
Tennessee played very, very well against LSU earlier this season when LSU was undefeated in conference play. Tennessee doesn't back down.
No, and we play good regardless of home or away. We show up against the best teams, and we have all year long. Mm-hmm. I mean, we should have beat this Florida State team when we played them that we were just talking about.
No.
I would say Auburn on upset alert for a couple reasons. One, I think that Tennessee is good enough defensively to give their guards problems. You know, their guards are just Doughty and number five, whatever his name is. I mean, they're really, really tough. Mm-hmm. If we can keep Wiley off the glass enough to where he doesn't just take over the game, like, that's the matchup. I don't know that we have an answer for Wiley down low for Auburn. I mean, your only hope is to just take it to him because he is foul prone.
Well, and John Fulkerson will do that. John Fulkerson is one of the best players in the conference.
Attack.
And Jerry Stackhouse said it. He was like, you know, in the first half, he's a little quiet, but we knew he was going to come and attack us, get us into foul trouble. And that's what John Fulkerson does. That's what he's best at, man. He gets everybody in foul trouble. Javon McCormick last night had 22 points. Listen to Auburn last night, okay?
That's the game I'm thinking of.
Lost by 10 to Georgia. And made a little bit of a comeback, but Anthony Edwards put it away with a couple late threes. Auburn, if Auburn shoots like it did last night, then Tennessee absolutely doesn't have just a good chance to win, can go in there and beat them. Auburn was awful, 31% from the field, 4-26 from three. Now,
that's
real bad for Tennessee because you're 4-26 against Georgia on Wednesday night. I mean, you're going to be,
at home.
You're going to be 14-33, you know, from three, or not, even better than that, probably. You're going to hit double digit threes, is what I'm saying.
They're streaky shooters. That's what I mean. Like, we will give their guards problems, and they're not going to get just a bunch of super easy looks for threes. If you can keep them in front and keep and contest, then that's the shots you want them to take. You want them just trying to go one-on-one and pull. And if they get hot, you're screwed. But that's true for any team
you
play.
That's true for any team. But you know, Auburn last year in that run through the SEC tournament, and then when Tennessee squared off against them in the SEC championship. Don't get me wrong. I mean, Tennessee exerted so much effort beating Kentucky the day before. But Auburn was just a team. At that point, Auburn was just on a run. You couldn't do anything about it.
And that's you got to give Bruce Pearl a lot of credit.
Oh, for sure.
Even if you don't want to, you have to, because
even if it stings.
Yeah, it might not feel great, but you got to, because Bruce Pearl lost those guards that you're referencing from last year. And he's got two different ones doing it this year. One is the transfer Samir Doughty, and then McCormick, and they've got other players playing at a crazy high level. Number 23 can dunk from, I swear, the free throw line. He's like Ponds-esque athleticism.
Yeah.
And he takes it to the rack hard. They've got a lefty that's long and lean, kind of looks like Jalen Johnson.
Jalen is kind of his lean for left tackle. Just put it out.
Yeah, but that's obviously not what I meant. Jalen Johnson. Yeah. But it's also tough because I just don't know that we have it against them down low. And part of that, Wiley's a senior. He's been there forever. He did not play like this. Mm-hmm. You know, and they lost a lot. Auburn lost a lot last year. They weren't supposed to be great this year. Yeah,
that's what people are saying about John Fulkerson, too. I saw that spaz out there the last couple of years. Who is this new guy?
Yeah, who's this? Well, he's got the floppy hair, and he's still kind of spazzy sometimes, but it works. He finishes. He's probably got the best field goal percentage of anyone that's taken the amount of shots he's taken.
And again, he attacks, and I think that's what he does very, very well.
Yeah, we're going to have to be aggressive. Hope they have a tough shooting night, and it's not out of the realm of possibility to go down there to Auburn and get a win this weekend. My last one, real quick. I know we got to go. I'm going to put the Lakers. Lakers-Celtics is this weekend. Lakers will be favored. I'm going to put the Lakers on upset alert because my C's are going to get it done. Beantown, baby.
Real quick. Florida on the road at Kentucky.
Ooh.
I'm not putting Kentucky on upset alert, but no. I mean, Florida is what Florida team are you going to get? You know, Florida's got such a talented roster, but has really just stepped all over itself all season long.
Kentucky is, again, a tough team to play ever because they take the ball to the basket better than anybody. Mm-hmm. Their guards are just so dang good at getting to the rim, drawing fouls, making free throws. They're gonna make a run because they play good defense. They're crazy athletic. They can shoot well enough. But they got a 7-footer, and they got guys that crash to just hunt the paint and attack the basket. That's how you win in March, because if you're not hot, you still got to be able to find a way to win basketball games. Attack, attack, attack.
All right, Minor Duke, VT, NC State, Florida, and one more note on yours, Auburn and Tennessee. Auburn, Four losses on the year, all in SEC play, two back-to-back, all of which have come on the road, plays extremely, extremely, extremely well at home. So, again, something else going against the Volunteers. All right, Florida, Georgia, Alabama, first up when we come back.
It's an axe throw Thursday on the Eric Ainge Show.
So
don't go anywhere.
Some good stories coming up here. Eric Ainge with Eric Kane. Let me try that again. I'm Eric Kane with Eric Ainge. This is Kaner, the Eric Ainge Kaner, Show Kaner, on the Sports Kaner. Animal.